Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Accent On with Alona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, Monday, Ilona Europa, Accent on LA Talk Radio, 6 till 7 p.m. Pacific Time. And today in the studio with us is Mike Gormley. He has his segment on Accent on called
Accent on Gormley.
Okay, one more time. Accent on?
Accent on Gormley.
Yay! I think we'll start today from the song. What about that? Huh? Song says all.
Make me mean, yeah, Lord, make me mean. Yeah, I don't want no bald-headed woman. It'll make me mean, yeah, Lord, make me mean. Yeah, I don't want no sugar in my coffee. It'll make me mean, yeah, Lord, make me mean. Yeah, I don't want no sugar in my coffee. It'll make me mean, yeah, Lord. My time, I don't my time. They haven't tapped me and bought it a mountain. They don't my time, I don't my time. Said I don't my time, I don't my time. Said I don't my time.
Mike, why
you
this
like that
song? Yes, with this commercial for like a new hairstyle or something, because the title of the song is very unusual.
They don't want a bald-headed woman.
Oh.
Make them mean.
Okay, we know a few stores here around.
Did you know who that was?
No.
The Who.
Whoa.
Still going.
Wow.
I wonder if they do that live. I don't know. Probably
very short
not.
Song, but very fun. Of course, very unusual. And I will ask Mike Gormley, why did you choose this song for today's show and as an introduction to our guests?
Because we have a gentleman named Harold Brunson on the show with us today. And Harold Brunson has a book called out called My British Invasion. And the Who were obviously part of that. And I just wanted to pick a tune that didn't necessarily make sense.
I think it has a sense because Who is in your book, yes? Harold, hi.
Hi.
You have a cool name. Both names are really cool.
Well, thank you. I don't think anybody's ever told me that before, but I will cherish that comment.
Oh, sounds really good, really good. And we had a cool conversation before our show about everything.
Yes.
A little bit about music business, but really about life, about beer. And about wine and about taste in books, mainly music is what we'll be talking today about and about your book?
Yes.
Okay, Mike, I know you know your guest very, very well. Then I think you just need to introduce us a little bit longer to his bio, which is beautiful and very strong.
Yes. Well, Harold co-founded Rhino Records. And Rhino Records, I always loved Rhino Records. It was bringing back a lot of music that you may not have been able to get hold of for a while. It was it just had compilations. I'll have Harold talk about it and describe it a little more. Yeah. But it really was a great then called reissue label. But it was also named more than once the best record company above any even the majors by NARM, which was a National Association of Retail
record merchandisers.
They were counting the amount of CDs sold, CDs, LPs probably there mostly.
No, actually it was voted on by the retailers.
Yeah, and the retailers. There were just interesting compilations, interesting stories, and then it went on. Harold went on to run Rhino Books and Rhino Films. He was executive producer of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas and a great movie called Why Do Fools Fall in Love? And even before that, he was a writer for the L.A. Times, for Rolling Stone magazine, and so on and so forth. So, the book is called My British Invasion. It's an inside story on a lot of the bands connected with that time. But why, Harold, is it My British Invasion as opposed to The British Invasion?
Well, that's a good question. So, first of all, I love this music when I was growing up. And when I started writing about music, so this was when I was at UCLA, but in the early and then mid-70s, but I interviewed a lot of these people when they came into town because they weren't having hits anymore. Mm. I don't think that many people were really interviewing them, and I think I got their stories. So that kind of stayed with me, later on to when I wrote this book. But the main thing when I was writing about music and then when Rhino started out, so this is late 70s, early 80s, the record business was selling millions and millions of records, and the major labels were looking for the next big selling artist, whether it be Fleetwood Mac or Michael Jackson. They wanted to sell millions of copies. So a lot of the great music from the past wasn't available because it wasn't worth their time to put it out. So as much as we liked new music and championed new music, it was very difficult to compete against the majors, and we found our niche by reissuing older music. But for us, it was more like this was really important for us when we were growing up. We loved this music. So let's make it sound good. Let's track down rare photos, really informative liner notes. So basically it was a quality emphasis, and I think that a lot of people felt the same way as we did.
It was a well-run business, but it seemed like you were doing it for the fun of it.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously the main motivation was the music, and as we got into it, it was like, oh, we can make enough money. We don't have to get real jobs. But we were always really, conscious of, well, what can we afford to pay something? And, because if you didn't run it well, you'd go out of business and you couldn't put out this great music anymore.
Mm. Wow. Okay, this is like a library of music. The people probably, by knowing your record company, they knew that if they find the catalog of the artist, they will find something that maybe is a little bit from the past.
Well, the idea would be to people would trust us as a company and to know that, okay, here's an album, here's some hits I know, but to put some really great songs on that they don't know. So it's basically it was...
Like Bald Headed Woman.
Well, that didn't make it, but but it's turning people on to great music. And one of the things with this book, My British Invasion, aside from getting the stories there, I want people to read this and for them to be turned on to songs that they might not be familiar with. Mm. Like, oh, let me track these songs down. Or also, hey, I always loved this record. I haven't played this in a long time. Mm-hmm. This is a good reminder. So ultimately, the most important thing is the music, and this sort of helps you with that.
You actually supply, at the back of the book, you supply suggested playlists on various bands.
You're almost like asking, where is the CD included with the book? Why don't have it?
Well, now you got a playlist. You can make it yourself. But, you know, you got some of their hits, but then you got a whole bunch of other stuff I didn't even know. Like, the Trogs really only had two hits.
Right. Well, in America, they only had two hits, but there was a period, I think probably a year and a half in England, where they had more hits than anybody, more than the Beatles or the Rolling Stones. But anyway, to get to your comment a while ago, I called it My British Invasion rather than The British Invasion, because it was part of the book is my orientation as a music fan and as I discovered the music. And also, I didn't really talk to everybody, so there's no chapter on the Beatles, no chapter on the Rolling Stones, no chapter on The Who, but then there's numerous books on those people. Yeah. But what about...
Well, you refer the Who in...
Well, it's obvious
through the book in some way.
Well, I mean, a lot of these people are mentioned. Sure, yeah, definitely, they're important. But what about the Yardbirds or the Zombies or Manfred Mann? Or you mentioned the Trogs or the Spencer Davis Group? Well, so this. So I think the chapters on the artists that are in this book are the best overviews and also the most accurate overviews. It's really important for me to convey the information accurately.
It's pretty interesting. These are known, and the British Invasion itself is the 60s, but you didn't get to London really till about 1970. But you were meeting them over here, and then you went there, or how did...
Well, actually, I was there. It's interesting. In September 1972, I first went over, and the interesting thing is I knew that a lot of the things I liked about the 60s, not only the music,
but
the fashion, and a lot. I knew going into it, like, okay, well, that's not going to be there, but, you know, I still had to go. But I tracked down people who rarely came to the U.S., you know, to interview them. And one example, you know, the Trogs. And to me, being in a room interviewing the Trogs, it was almost like Indiana Jones is an archaeologist. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're kind of digging somewhere and you, like, undiscover, you know, there's this great discovery. And it was almost like... here they are in the flesh in front of me, and I couldn't quite believe it. And again, because they really weren't having hits and they weren't being interviewed, I think I got really great stories out of them.
They were ready to talk.
Yeah.
There was no more, I'm a pop star. They were able to talk about things maybe they couldn't have mentioned when things were rolling along for them.
Well, I mean, you know, the other thing you have to realize is a lot of times... A few years before that, when a lot of these artists were in their groups and management and stuff, they weren't going to say negative things about those situations.
Right.
But
right.
A few years later, out of those situations, they could be more candid. So I noticed that among the people I interviewed as well.
Did you, along those lines, one of the bands that always interested me, which is Manfred Mann.
Yes.
Manfred Mann had a lot of hits and a lot of pretty... soulful versions of songs and original songs and Dylan songs they did, but Manfred Mann himself, whatever his real name was, I've forgotten, is a jazz guy, and some of those guys in that band, like Jack Bruce and so on, were jazz people, and I always wondered if they were just doing it for the money, and then I thought, well, how can they be so good and just do it for the money? But their base was jazz. Did you encounter that dichotomy a little bit?
Well, I mean, that's you know, Manfred Mann, most people in the U.S. know them from Doo-Wah Diddy Diddy and the Mighty Quinn primarily. They were much bigger in England. And originally, Michael Lubavitz, he's from South Africa,
and
he didn't like, you know, what was happening with apartheid there, so he emigrated to England. But he was a jazz guy, and he advertised in the jazz magazines to tutor people.
Mm.
So
he's a keyboard player mainly, right?
Yes. Mm. And his musical partner back then and for many years, they had an R&B band, the Man Hug, you know, R&B band, and they had like different sort of titles for it, and that rolled into Manfred Mann. So like a number of groups, probably the best example being the Rolling Stones, but they were into American rhythm and blues and blues. And then, you know, then the music kind of evolved from there. But the thing that Manfred Mann, aside from the high quality of musicianship, these, you know, jazz cats playing rock and roll, is their arranging, their ability to arrange. I mean, Manfred was great at that, and Mike Vickers, who actually, despite the hits that the band had, he quit because he loved classical music and arranging. So he on the Beatles' "All You Need Is Love," the arrangements on the My World telecast, he arranged the orchestra. He programmed the Moog synthesizer for the Abbey Road album. So these were like really heavy cats, and that's why their records were so good.
Wow. Well, they knew what they knew what they were doing.
Wow. Oh, we need to bring cameras to your place, to your home, and just talk to you more, because obviously, oh, you need to come back. And because really, it's so many great bands, like you say, who have tie-ins with the big, big names that we all know, but we don't even know how much they brought of the sound to even sound of the Beatles. That's amazing.
Yes.
Ah, okay. Then there was 1970, what?
Two.
Two. When you went to...
That's the first year I got to London as well.
To London, yeah.
Yeah, so I have a few chapters of when I went to London, and part of it is I wanted to bring the reader along with me as I kind of, you know, discovered the scene and, you know, who I spoke to and what I did, because it's part of history and obviously a history that no longer exists.
There was mention, and I don't know if it was in a piece about the book that I read somewhere, but the Beatles label, Apple, had an influence on how Rhino was structured or run, or how, maybe you can explain that connection.
Okay, well, we started the Rhino Records label out of the back room of our Rhino Records store, and as we evolved, there were a number of influences, and the Beatles, Apple Records, at least initially, had very high standards, was very quality conscious. The artists, Badfinger, Mary Hopkin, a number of the artists in addition to the Beatles were of a high level. So it wasn't anything I think we could really achieve with our shoestring budget. But nonetheless, for labels like Apple Records, and Elektra Records, for instance, the quality that came out of there, it was always good to kind of have something to aspire to.
Do you, with the music we hear today, have, you know, the music in the 60s had their roots in rock and roll in the 50s, and the 70s had their roots and so on, but music today, especially more electronic oriented or rap or whatever, seems to have just completely left the roots and the history behind. They've shifted. Is there a connection between the British invasion and what we're hearing today? Is there, or is it just gone?
Yeah, I don't really think the connection is there. You know, it's interesting, and you of course remember the well, I mean, you know, going back a few years, but I think the main influence in rock and roll, I think, emanates from grunge. And one of the problems that I have as a music fan is that grunge, ushered in a realm where singers didn't have to be that good. And I think a lot of the singers in the bands in the 60s and the 70s, by comparison, were really good. So it makes it hard for me to relate to, artists in the post-grunge era. So I think, you know, that's a big influence, you know, today.
We have some song, Mike. Will we play, or you would like to ask one more question? We have "Give Me Some Loving" song. Do we want
you
to
want play?
Play
it, Spencer Davis.
A little bit. Yes, "Give Me Some Loving."
Thank you.
Spencer Davis Group.
I know, the title is so cool, and of course we love this style of music. So much energy,
Do you know the lead singer on there, Iona?
No.
A guy named Stevie Winwood.
Okay.
And he went on to have hits on his own, but when he was singing that, I'm wrong, Harold, but I believe he was 16 when he was singing that.
No, yeah. 16 years old.
He was 16 when he went on to form a band called Traffic with Eric Clapton, and he's a major, major player to this day.
Wow.
But 16 years old when he sang that song, and a few other really good ones. There.
Okay, everybody who is 16 and sings, can you compare yourself to this vocalist?
What a great record, and his thing was he sounded almost indistinguishable from Ray Charles at such a young age, and they made some really great records. But one of the things, because he was so young, and it was a four-piece, and his older brother was the bass player, but he wanted to play with people, you know, musicians who are a little bit closer to his age, and that's one of the reasons why he got fed up and left Spencer Davis Group and formed Traffic. And then, of course, after he left, even though the Spencer Davis Group, you know, did continue to record, it really wasn't the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it was Spencer. You know, do you see him? I see him around town every once in a while, around L.A., Spencer Davis.
Yeah, I hadn't seen him in a while, but I actually did have lunch with him a few weeks ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is he doing okay? Because I saw him about a year ago, and he didn't seem well.
Well, we can talk about that later.
Then we are talking today about book. The title is...
My British Invasion by Harold Brunson.
Okay, and we have Harold with us in the studio, and obvious we remember, I'm sure, my age, I remember Rhino Records. I think staying 20-something years in this business is just crazy amount of time. I know you are walking encyclopedia of who is who, probably, and you cover this in your book from 1960s till 90. What is the period in of the time?
Well, it focuses primarily on the artists from the British Invasion period in the 1960s, but it dips into the early 70s.
Okay.
For instance, there's a chapter on Mark Bolan, who was very big internationally but only had one hit in the U.S. And then there's a chapter on trying to make a movie from John Lydon's book called Rotten. And then also the early 60s in London, and what was the scene like? And
yeah. Then I would love to talk to you really what's happened after this book, because the book was released when? 2 years ago? A year ago? When?
Oh, this book here? No, it just came out a few months ago.
Just came out, and you have one more before this one.
The Rhino Record Story.
Yeah, but somehow I think this is tie in between both of them, yes? Or you now?
Right, there definitely was a tie in, so... I think we had a really remarkable company, partly because we did things for the right reasons. So, for instance, the passion we had for the music drove us as far as what we did with the label, not necessarily the profitability, although we were profitable. And then we were very humane as far as how we treated our employees. In 1 year, we were recognized by the Clinton administration, Robert Reich. The Secretary of Labor came to us and came to our office and made a presentation. And
how would Robert Reich have known about, and I don't mean this in a slight way, but how would he know about Rhino Records or how it ran? And
I don't really have an answer for that. I wasn't trying to delegitimize it. Hey, what are you doing here? But no, I mean, you know, they have their staff and whatever the process was, but we were the only entertainment company that
But you said so many beautiful words that this was a company who felt for the artists and really looked after what is the best and tried to bring this music and like that has staying power and be very memorable, and packaging was beautiful. Everybody recognized this gorgeous rhino. Right. Yes, everything was just so friendly and like if you felt like in home when you came for another record. Into your company, can you find any recommendation right now? Do you know any record company that is a little bit similar to yours? So friendly, so artist-oriented, so do you?
No, but I also want to mention one other thing. The other thing that we loved was a lot of the crazy men from rock and roll and that wild spirit. So when you think about, you know, Jerry Lee Lewis or Little Richard, meaning like rock and roll was a really spirited thing. And I think as it got sort of corporatized and, you know, calculating, it lost a lot of that. So we tried to do a lot of wild and crazy things at our company that sort of, you know, retained that wild spirit.
And it did, but it was. But you're right. I can't think of a label
similar
today. And but there are independent labels. There are some independent labels that have personality and have charm to them. But
because you covered so many artists, it was not like, oh, you took care of the five or six. You really were, you know, probably having hundreds of artists and great songs, great releases or re-releases. You know, and then and you still, how many people were working right now to look
I mean, just overall at the height of our company we had 167 employees.
No, that's a lot.
But again, I want to mention that as we're discussing this, the most important thing is the music and being able to turn people on to great music that they haven't heard. So one of the things that Mike mentioned earlier is when we got into films with Rhino Films, one of the things I wanted to do was to, you know, when you go into a theater and you hear this great music loud coming from the speakers, you get turned on to songs you haven't been, you know, familiar with. And you think, hey, I want to go buy that or buy the soundtrack album. So, for instance, in the Rhino Records story, I talk about some of our films like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas or Why Do Fools Fall in Love, which you mentioned earlier, which is the Frank and Lyman and the Teenager story. And they were the first teen rock and roll band, which is to say Frankie was originally 13 years old. All the other sort of rock and roll acts, you know, they were in their 20s, but he was the first real teen idol. And
an amazing voice.
Oh, yeah. And in fact, obviously, when he got a little bit older, his voice changed. But hearing those songs in a, you know, big theater, big speakers, it's just what a great experience. So the idea was, again, to try to turn people on to, you know, this great music.
I think it's a great idea. Holidays are coming. I think parents, especially, if you want to introduce your children to great music, from what we remember, grandparents remember, and some of them even from 80s and 90s too, yes, then maybe we're supposed to purchase this book and go to the last page and see the list of the great songs.
I think the kids should be buying this for their parents.
You think like that? I always think about educating.
I'd love to turn on kids to this music. But
okay,
I
everybody, kids who listen smart to the radio, go to Amazon, I'm sure, and purchase the book. The title is, Mike?
My British Invasion by Harold Brunson.
Wow.
By Harold Brunson isn't part of the title, but it happens to be by Harold Brunson.
And just learn about history of music and your own private taste, because I'm sure a lot of these interviews and a lot of the focus on the music is because you felt something so special about the artist that you interviewed.
Yes.
Lovely. Anyway, we are waiting for a phone call from Australia, but for right now, you know, I maybe will stop us and bring Tiffany to this conversation, but I would love to know what you were doing after leaving right now.
Well, it's interesting. I thought that, okay, I'm, you know, be playing a lot of golf, but I didn't do that at all. So, you know, I mentioned that I'd, you know, produced a handful of films, and Simon Fuller came to me, and he wanted to produce a new Monkees TV show. And
called the Monkees, or just based on the Monkees?
Well, you know, I said, I mean, he wanted to do, you know, because of Rhino's involvement with the Monkees, and of course, in the Rhino Records story, I have a couple of chapters on that. But I said to him, why didn't you call it something else? Then, you know, you don't have to cut me in or cut Rhino in on the licensing. But he wanted to do covers of some of those great songs. So we worked on that for a while, and it got pretty far along, but that never got to a pilot stage. And then I wanted to do a Ramones movie, couldn't get anybody interested. I wanted to do My Sharona, A True Rock and Roll Romance. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the problem is Hollywood doesn't understand rock movies. They tend to lose money, and therefore, you know, I just didn't think that it was something that was viable for me. So then I turned to writing or revisiting, you know, writing when I was in my 20s. And I thought with the Rhino Records story that if I didn't preserve the history of our company, I thought it would be lost. So that was the main motivation for doing, you know, that book.
And your partner in Rhino, we haven't talked about very much, Richard Foos, is but he's still very active, isn't he, in Shout, I believe it's called.
Hi there.
Oh,
that was pretty abrupt. Hi, Tiffany. Let us for 1 second finish our conversation, and then I will bring you to our studio.
Excellent.
From Australia. Okay.
Thank you, Ilona.
Okay, stay put, and I will introduce you to our listeners. Yes, Maggie, you were saying.
Anyway,
After Rhino, who's my partner at Rhino, he decided that he still wanted to continue. And so his company is Shout Factory with some other senior executives at Rhino. So they're, you know, kind of continuing, you know, the spirit of what we were doing.
Cool.
Beautiful. I will come back to you. But right now we have somebody calling from Australia. And somebody is really, really friendly to our show. We had a pleasure to play twice, I think, your song. Hi, Tiffany.
Hi, Ilona. How are you going?
Oh, we are fine. I know it's morning in Australia. You have a lot of energy. Yes.
Ah, I do. I do. I've had a good sleep. I'm feeling great. I was looking forward to speaking with you. So, absolutely.
Wonderful. Tiffany, if you can a little bit tell us about yourself to our listeners, okay?
Oh, not a problem. So I've been recording for quite some time. I personally have two albums under my belt. And I had the pleasure of meeting Liz Scott and Sam Michaels through the Your Music Out Loud in the USA competition last year.
And I need to say that Mike and myself will be judging this competition. And I know this is the last week that everybody who would like to submit their songs, please submit. And the Music Out Loud competition. And please go to all the links that I always post on my Ilona Europa site, on Facebook, or on Accent On. And just we have one more week. And I'm hoping that Liz and Sam is listening to our conversation. Because you were awarded, yes?
I was very fortunate. I was absolutely thrilled to finish in sixth position with my track Numb. And the rest is, as I say, is history. We've done two amazing remixes together. I highly encourage everybody to enter. So
I would love
absolutely.
To play the one of your song because it's cool. People don't hear mostly, they hear one version, but we have two versions of your song. And this song is very, very special to you. And I would love also honor your pain because I know what is the song about. But if you can bring a little bit the story behind the song to us.
Sure. So unfortunately, my best friend, my mum, she passed away. She actually had a rare form of leukemia. It's extremely, extremely rare. And she managed to be, unfortunately, one of the people that was challenged by it. And she passed away. She passed away a couple of years ago. And it's about dealing with the after effect of someone that you really love. What the feelings that you go through after they've passed, and the new life that you have, because things do change dramatically, you know.
Yeah.
So it's
I can
you know
imagine.
It's sad, but it's very expressive.
Yeah, but I also would love to say that a lot of positive things also. Is coming your way, and we played your song Numb, and your sixth position is pretty, pretty good. And if people in America want to hear how sixth position sounds, then award, then they will understand that your song Broken also could be number one on any charts. And I know that it's very unusual because sometimes DJs or great producers also create the remix for the song. And we will be having chance to hear two very unusual versions of the same song. Then, yeah, let's, Tiffany, go. Let's, did I mention your name right away?
Ah, Tiffany Gao. Yes.
Yeah,
no, it sounded great to me.
I know. Elena. I have the Polish accent.
Yeah,
I
great
love
to
Australia.
Me.
Then let's listen for right now the Maybe Broken, the first version, the radio cut. Okay?
Beautiful. Thank you. Enjoy.
hi, Tiffany.
Hi, Ilona. Thank you so much. That was awesome.
It was a beautiful song. I am a radio fan. You have beautiful, beautiful voice. And
Thank you.
Love your songwriting. And what can I say? Sam Michaels is just amazing. And I would love to repeat your music out loud in the USA Song Competition 2017 in 1 week. Closing for people who would like to submit their songwriting skills, their new songs, demos. They can be rough demos. They don't need to be, perfectly created. And also they have lyrics, contest for the lyrics this year. Then just people find go Google the Music Out Loud in the USA Song Competition 2017. And Tiffany, hopefully you will be here soon in LA or Nashville or wherever, or New York. Hopefully I would love that.
And I will continue to work hard and just take advantage of, live life and really fulfill any, wonderful opportunity that I can. So
we wish
absolutely,
you
I would
really,
love that. I would love
really,
that.
Really, really, really the best. And any new song, please send our way. I will be playing. For right now, I would love people to hear completely different version, which is a little trance version. And Sam Michaels from Club Jumpers did also this one. And let's hear the difference between both of them. For right now, I need to kiss you goodbye and talk to you soon.
No problem. Thank you so much for having me, Ilona. I really appreciate it. I love your show and you've been amazing. Can I say thank you very much to Liz Scott and Sam Michaels and Dan Matthews, and they've been amazing. So I really appreciate this. Thank you so much.
Oh, they are getting your kisses right now. Bye, Tiffany.
Awesome.
No more coffee
thank
for you. Bye-bye.
Thank
you. Bye, sweetie. Bye. Okay, Broken, we have a remix, a short version of this song. Oh, we will fade out. I really think Tiffany wants to stay with us, and I wish her that she will stay with us because she's an amazing, amazing singer. And Harold just mentioned he really, really likes her voice and likes her song. And, you know, and we are like, I am like, why we cannot find some label, somebody who will put accent on the people, maybe on the songs even, because it's very hard to put so much money behind the one artist. But behind the song is much easier because it has a potential and good ears like Harold's and on Mike's and even mine or Liz. Scott and Sam, Michaels, who just created, of course, remixes for Tiffany Go. You know, it's just something needs to be done for this young artist. That young and old is all about songs. It's not really who is young, who is old. Is can the song give us some memories? Can give us something that we long for it. And later, when I was younger, I think I was more attached to songs. On the radio or on a CD or on LP. Right now, it's 5 songs on the radio, people. I have 3 or 4 radio stations in my car and drives me crazy, and no CD player in my car, like I mentioned. All the time, the same 5 artists. Horrible! Okay, I'm not complaining. I'm very happy right now. And Mike, do you have some comments? And Harold, do you have some comments?
Along those lines, I want to quote Graham Nash, who, when he said this, was fairly new on the scene. He was in a band called The Hollies. And he said, I've never been so frightened, so excited about the power we have over young people. And one wonders if artists still have that power, and if they do, why aren't they using that too? What do you think, Harold, on that line?
Well, I think things are just so diffuse, but we talked a little bit about this earlier, but in the early 60s, there was a protest. Protest music originally came out of Greenwich Village, but it really made an impact protesting against the Vietnam War, for instance, and also what was happening with, you know, segregation in the South. And that's really, I think, needed today, and I think it's really lacking. But one of the things, I did want to mention, you know, we were talking about my book, My British Invasion, but in the introduction, I mentioned so many of these songs are still used today and, you know, in TV and movies and commercials. But it's not just the hits like the Kinks, You Really Got Me, in a Yoplait commercial. I mean, there's like an obscure zombie song in like the HBO show Girls, or, you know, the Creation. Like, nobody knows who the Creation are in America, but, you know, Making Time used in a Depends commercial. It's like, what's that all about? So I just think, you know, good music is timeless. It could be experienced by anybody, even somebody who's, you know, wasn't around back then and is too young. And, you know, the most important thing is there's a lot of great music out there. And, you know, how do you find it? Well, hopefully my book can help you do that.
Wow, beautiful, beautiful ending. Okay. Hey, I let myself to end the show with snippets of my song. Mike, what about that?
Yes, listen, we'll hear some of your music. Do you have any protest music?
No, but I have a song. It's very weird, and it's called Anticipation, but one of the saddest songs that I ever wrote and sang, and has very sad story because the producer of the song died of overdose, when, you know. Yeah. But anyway, song is still one of the, I like a lot. Anyway, today, mwah, bye. Next Monday, Accent on LA Talk Radio 6 till 7 p.m. Ilona Europa. Mike will be with us in 2 or 3 weeks because we have vacation, I think. And today we had a very, very nice, a very, very cool guest, Harold Bronson. I love your 2 names. Very, very cool. Harold Bronson, actor, book writer, filmmaker. Is it just like, you know, flows very nicely. And we are very thankful that you spend this time with us, Mike. Thank you so much for your friend and guest.
Thanks for having us here. Always great to be on this show.
I love it. Thank you so much. Oh, a little bit of anticipation.
listening to Accent On with Alona Europa. Right here on LA Talk Radio.
Over and over again, leaving my heart. Tell me again, I love you. Mon amour, solo too familiar. I want to keep it.
Someone told me that one.